This is Professor Allen, and welcome to The Quarter Bin. In every episode of this podcast, I will summarize, criticize, discuss, and review a single issue from my comic book collection, which I will usually select sort of at random. Any book from my comic book collection is eligible, as long as I paid no more than 25 cents for it. Was the issue worth 25 cents? Was it a bargain at 25 cents? Or was it still overpriced? Stay tuned and find out. For this 21st episode of The Quarter Bin, I'm looking at Adam Strange, The Man of Two Worlds, book number 3, from DC Comics, cover dated May 1990. Like parts 1 and 2 of this story, covered in episodes 15 and 18 respectively, this is a 48-page prestige format book, and this episode is going longer than average, although shorter than last episode's conversation with Michael Bailey. So, figured it made sense to talk about feedback here in the episode that's already going to go long. Especially since a lot of the feedback has been about these Adam Strange stories. Podcasting veteran, co-host of the Fire and Water podcast and Who's Who, and certified all-around good dude, the Irredeemable Shag, wrote that he recently got caught up on all the Quarter Bin podcasts. As he said in his email subject line, "The Quarter Bin is my jam." The podcast has really tapped into some kind of zeitgeist with the peek into comics history, the random nature of the issues, the brevity, and your delivery. Thanks, Shag. I did have to chuckle at his praise for my brevity for two reasons. One, last episode did run right at an hour. And two, Shag was once involved in a podcast episode that went over 4 hours long. So maybe he's just a little bit jealous. In terms of the back catalog, he had particularly nice things to say about episodes 11 and 13, the Micronauts and Luke Cage episodes. He said he loves the Micronauts series. Wonderfully dense writing with luscious artwork. I started reading it a few years ago in an effort to feed my love of late Bronze Age comics. Well, Shag, don't tell anyone, but we might have another Micronauts issue coming up in a few months. He ends with his catchphrase, "Find your comic book joy." You know, Shag has really tapped into something there for comic book readers, encouraging us to be comfortable loving what we love. I've joked with Shag that some people have found their joy in a title, or in an era of comics, or in a creator. But I've really found my joy at a price point. Thanks for that insight. Shag also left iTunes feedback, and I also appreciate that. In episode 16, we talked about an issue of Stormwatch, Team Achilles, my first foray into the Wildstorm line. Luke Jaconetti confessed that Wildstorm was a complete blind spot for him, as it was for me. People shout things about Stormwatch or the Authority or whatever at me, and I just shrug it off as I have no idea what they're talking about. The only modern Wildstorm book I have read was the latest version of Wetworks, which is a series about mercenaries in gold liquid armor fighting werewolves. Luke, Luke, Luke. He continues, "Like a lot of the old Wildstorm properties, these names and concepts keep on getting recycled as DC and Jim Lee keep trying to keep the universe going." Jason Trenner also emailed about that episode, wondering along with me what happened in the first 3 issues, as that one seems so much like an origin story. He also pointed out that the plot thread I mentioned about a handful of billionaires running the world does play out over the course of the series, and is a plot point throughout the Wildstorm verse. He also commented that he was totally unfamiliar with the book that I covered in the next episode, The Nom. Luke Jaconetti commented also about the issue of The Nom. I was looking forward to his comics, as I consider him an expert on war books, but he says that growing up, he was totally unaware of them. "Only in the last 10 years or so have I started to become more interested and well-read in the genre," he writes, "mostly because of DC Comics' excellent Showcase Presents trades, which gave a lot of attention to their war comics from the Silver and Early Bronze Age." He laments that over the years, war comics have become more and more niche, and eventually, most readers just forget about them. About The Nom in particular, Luke says, "What I always thought it did differently was the overall rounded approach to the presentation of the soldier. We get combat, certainly, but we also get the quiet moments, the humanity, and in general, just more of the experience. It's a thoughtful and fair series, without resorting to either jingoistic saber-rattling or leftist anti-military navel-gazing." He adds that he heartily recommends the Nom to anyone who has even a passing interest in war comics. That brings us to episode 18, the second volume of this Adam Strange series. Like episode 15, the first volume, number 18, also generated a good amount of comments. The irredeemable Shag wrote that this episode was interesting to him. "I'm a recent convert to the character. The Planet Heist story was my gateway into Adam." He points out how similar many of the classic Strange stories are. Alon is in trouble, Sardath is suspected of evil doing, Ran is threatened, and finally no real change or consequences last. Seems every new writer ignores or fixes previous changes to return the character to his iconic status. Can you feel my dissatisfaction? And like many listeners, Shag wondered whether this story would end up making substantial and lasting changes to the character. Well, in about 25 or 30 minutes from now, I think we'll know the answer to that question. Ben Avery wrote back in, and there was more than just a little bit of jealousy in his email. "I can't get over a quarter bin with prestige-bound books. And you got the entire series? I've only managed to get prestige books at a dollar each. I found that for a while I was looking through the cheap bins for prestige books specifically because they tended to be longer, deeper, and more meaty, and usually self-contained stories." He mentions Gilgamesh and Martian Manhunter books as particularly bountiful scores for him. And echoing many, Ben says, "I hope you address how this reboot affected the future appearances of Adam. As I listen, that's the question I find myself asking. Did this reboot work? Did it stick?" Well, about 25 or 30 minutes from now, I think we'll know the answer to that question. Podcasting's Michael Bradley, host of a new podcast featuring Superman and Batman, which he called the Superman and Batman Podcast, also commented on episode 18. "Strange has long been at the top of my favorite characters that no one really cares about, but that have a lot of potential, and why doesn't anyone see that list?" "This miniseries, while maybe not perfect, nails a lot of it. Looking forward to your coverage of the conclusion." All right, Michael, ask and ye shall receive. One quick promo, and then we'll get right on that.
In the heart of the Midwest, a mystery is brewing.
"I want you to explain to me why a federal agency would issue a report for a boy who died 32 years ago.
In the heart of a family, faith is being tested.
The DNA test came back. Jacob is your son, Mr. Lex.
In the heart of the listeners, questions will rise.
Did I die? Did we all die?
Noodle Mix Network, in partnership with MediaVoiceovers.com, proudly present the one podcast that will get to the heart of what it truly means to be alive. Join Wayne Henderson and Troy Heinrichs for Resurrection Revealed. Watch ABC's Resurrection, then subscribe to get to the heart of each episode. Follow on Twitter at ResurrectionPod and listen all season at ResurrectionRevealed.com.
Adam Strange, The Man of Two Worlds, Book 3, had a cover price of $3.95. Meaning I acquired this book for way more than a 90% discount. The story, creatively titled Chapter 3, was written by Richard Bruning with art by Andy and Adam Kubert. The cover has that same half matte, half glossy look that gives it a paleo 3D look. But that format is the highlight of the cover, as the art itself is not really working for me. I like evil, crazy Sardath in the background, arms bent and fingers extended like a mad scientist. In the midground, we get Foxy Dr. Fox holding a swaddled sack of potatoes against her chest. Given what I know of the plot, I assume this is Alana and Adam's baby, but it doesn't really look all that baby-like. And Adam is in the foreground looking angry and determined and more than a bit hunchbacked. War is erupting all about him. So the details of the cover I don't really get, but it does set the emotional tone correctly. The issue itself starts with Adam Strange and his mother-in-law Bantir riding a flying beast, the kind that Strange routinely battled over the years. We learn that after the war 1,000 years ago, the radiation slowly poisoned the population, which was the cause of the declining fertility on the planet. Sardath implemented genetic matching for couples to increase the strength of the population. We hated each other. As his plans failed to cure our ills, he became a very bitter and frustrated man. After Alana was born, Bantir was exiled. It was a common procedure to dispel undesirables. She escaped the killings outside the city-states and made her way to the valley. Many there were exiled for being followers of the Jakas Heart. It was a powerful religion long ago until the Technos, like Sardath, outlawed it. She explained how the valley had blossomed by surprise. All our years of pain were made up for almost overnight. We grew and thrived. We even had our first pregnancy. Adam is stunned. I had no idea Sardath did such things. Or what happened to Alana's mother. I never asked. You never thought it suspicious that a communications beam could transport a person across space? He would do anything to repopulate Ran. Then they see the smoldering wreckage of Ranagar. Get this monster down! Now! In Ranagar, Foxy Dr. Fox is brought to Del at the government complex. Sir, we found this woman outside. We don't recognize her clothes or language. Del does understand one of Eve's words. Strange. Alana will understand her. Let's go. Nearby, Alana is attacked by a council member who had previously attacked Sardath. Is there really a living creature growing inside you? This counselor confesses that he and the other counselors are actually clones of Sardath, which may explain why I had so much trouble telling them apart. As expected, he is pro-clone and thus anti-baby. He raises a dagger high over Alana's really big belly and is shot dead by Sardath, who lost an eye when Adam attacked him, but is wearing a pretty cool one-eyed visor and some sort of cloak-like outfit, and a crazy look in his one good eye. His med unit was tampered with before, and it seems to have affected his brain. Alana goes into labor. Yee, looks like baby stuff, Sardath concludes. I am not good at this sort of thing. Del and Foxy Dr. Fox burst in, bringing two of our three plot threads together. The newly crazed Sardath flits off, and Del barely recognizes the Ranian leader. Dr. Fox gets to work prepping Alana for delivery, and the women are able to communicate. Between breaths, Alana is able to tell the doctor, "This is Ran. Adam never told me about you." The beast lands outside the building, and while his mother-in-law ties up the beast, Adam talks/forces his way past the guards. He doesn't say, "Do you know who I am?" But it's kind of implied. He finds his wife in early labor. She's not due for a couple months. And his mistress, tending to her. Alana! Eve! Bringing all three of our main plot points together. Alana asks reasonable questions between panting and contractions. It's actually a starkly realistic and oddly beautiful panel. Adam, who is this woman? What's going on? Oh, you know, she's a doctor from Earth. Not a lie per se, but certainly not the truth either. The Earthlings leave Alana for a brief chat in the hallway. Adam demonstrates his priorities. How did you get here? And did you tell Alana about us? Listen, creep, I'm the one who should be asking questions here. Is that your child she's about to have? To be fair, this is a great question. Adam tries to explain, yes, Evelyn, it was my last time on Earth. I was saying goodbye forever to a lot of things. By cheating on your wife, good for you! You don't understand, I was... Look, forget it, I'll help. Alana, is it? I'll do whatever I can. She's just lucky I've got my med kit with me. Adam learns that the city-state of Zered has attacked, having sabotaged the defense's last issue. He goes off to see just what's going on, leaving Eve and Alana behind. Bantir walks in, offering to help. I have experience with childbirth, she says. After Alana passes out from the pain, Dr. Fox admits with the Rhenian technology destroyed, Alana is at risk. Bantir reveals to Eve that she is Alana's mother. Dr. Fox's apology is interrupted by Alana shrieking, the baby is coming. Bantir calls Alana by a childhood nickname, telling her, I've got you. Your mother's here. Sardath, Del, and Adam take off in a flying scooter, which is blasted out of the sky. Del is hurt, and Sardath disappears. Adam goes out to search for him and repair the computer damage in the war room, promising to come back for Del. Adam tracks down Sardath in the technology hub, and he has done some crazy rewiring. You madman! What have you done? Hey, wasn't it you who once said to me, build a better mouse hat, and the worm will eat a path through your door? Uh-oh. Yeah, he's now full-on crazy now. Adam storms off and slips on an old jetpack. He sees Zered's forces approaching. What can I do? Fight them off with my bare hands? And so he flies off the other direction, towards his wife and child. And he sees Eve first. How is she? Let me see. Adam, let me talk to you. Did you move her? She's okay, isn't she? Adam, stop. No, I've had enough of everything going wrong. This is the place where I'm a hero and everyone respects me. She slaps him and tells him to stop feeling sorry for himself. Adam, I did my best, but it was too much for her. She's gone now. Bantir approaches, a baby in her arms. Adam, look. Look what Alana left us. Now she can be the best of both worlds. Adam collapses in a heap. Del finds Sardath in his crazy, rewired, high-tech crazy room. He tries to explain that the Zeradians are attacking and that he is needed. Why don't you help us? Help? Help? Dear fellow, I'm setting us free. And Sardath pushes a button. And then we get six gorgeous, totally silent pages. We are probably 130 pages into the story, hurtling towards the end. The book has been very dialogue heavy, and these pages are literally a change of pace. There is the temptation to blast through these six pages to get to the end of the story, but these pages plead with you to slow down, take a break, to look at exactly what is happening, to catch your breath before the story ends. The first two pages are multi-paneled, showing an earthquake and glass walls shooting from the ground, a sort of force field maybe, keeping the Zered forces out. All of our characters are screaming in terror, except Sardath, who seems pleased with himself, in a crazy way. Then we get a two-page spread, which may be the highlight of the issue. The glass walls have formed a dome around Ranagar, and the entire city is lifting off the surface of Ran. Then we get two one-page splashes of the bottled city, sorry, that's the only way I can describe it, flying off-world into the atmosphere. A few weeks later, and I believe that the bottled city, sorry, that's the only way I can describe it, has landed on an uninhabited planet, or maybe it's just orbiting, I can't quite tell. Sardath has used his crazy scientific genius to draw water molecules from the air, and also producing very bizarre art. Eve visits the scientist, and he reveals that a particular concept has become increasingly important to him. And what is that, Mr. Wizard? He whispers to her conspiratorially, "Nonsense." She then asks why she has not been affected by the Zeta Beam, the same way that Adam has. Remember that he had a bizarre nightmare scenario and ended up attacking Sardath when he last arrived via Zeta Beam. Well, radiation poisoning is cumulative, we know. Obviously, someone underestimated the dosage already in his system from the continued abuse. "Someone?" she asks. "From what I understand, that someone was you, Sardath." Sardath shrugs, and the pair are interrupted by Del, who reminds Sardath that tonight is the meeting to finalize the new government structure. Before the two men fly off, Sardath recommends to Eve, "Be a dear and check on what's-his-name, will you? He's not been himself lately." Eve walks past Krent, the revolutionary from prior issues, who reminds Eve that, like the Zeredians, she is also an alien, an outsider. "I admit you've helped us, but remember, Doctor, we didn't ask you to come." He then makes a crack about Bantier, and we learn that she has taken charge of the city. "She's doing a good job," Eve says, "and it galls you, Krent." Bantier is feeding and changing the baby, named Aaliyah. We learn that Adam has been ignoring Aaliyah for weeks. Bantier gives the baby to Eve, who has been tasked with making sure Adam makes it to the meeting that night. "You and Adam are not getting out of helping us make this place work." Eve and Aaliyah find Adam on a rock outcropping. "Adam, you can't stay here forever. Why won't you stay out of my life?" "How can I? I'm holding part of it in my arms." He says nothing in reply, and she continues with what is a pretty long and very insightful monologue. "You selfish son of a... You told me your life was really tough because your parents didn't want you. Well, they didn't leave you out in the desert to die. They cared for you as best they could. So what about this baby? You want to be the hero? You tough this out. Sure, it's hell that she's gone, but you have a father-in-law that needs you now more than ever, and a whole lot of innocent bystanders back there who could use your help. Including me. I'm so far from home. At least you know these people. You're kind of all we've got here." The art makes it clear that the "we" is Eve and Aaliyah. "You're kind of all we've got here. Your wife was a wonderful woman, Adam. How do you think she would feel about you deserting your daughter?" She tells him about the meeting. "For some reason, Bantier thought you might want to be involved. I'll tell her how wrong she was." Eve turns, Aaliyah still in her arms, and starts the long walk back to the city. Adam catches up with her a short time later. He holds his arms out. "Can I carry her back?" And the little family, such as it is, walks back together to begin the process of making a new society. Along with the baby, Adam and Eve walk back together to begin the process of making a new society.
"I am vengeance. I am the knight. I am Batman."
"You need to take the trash out."
"Hey, I'm trying to make a trailer for a podcast."
"Oh, you mean Supermates, the husband and wife geek cast?"
"Why, yes, that is what I mean. The show where you and I discuss all things geeky. Comics, TV, movies, books, you name it."
"Well, are you going to tell them that you can find the show at www.supermatescomic.blogspot.com?
"Well, I think you kind of already did."
"And that new shows will be posted bi-weekly, every 2 weeks?"
"I was, but you just kind of did that too."
"Well, see, now you can go take out the trash."
"Great."
"So join us, Cindy
and Chris
Franklin, for the Supermates, the husband and wife geekcast, at supermatescomic.blogspot.com.
And we're back. Okay, a few things. I say this a lot, and it applies to movies, novels, comic books, TV shows, etc. endings are hard. And there were some things about the ending of the story that I did not dig. But let me start with what I did like. There is a difference between dialogue and story. And although I didn't like parts of the overall arc of the story, there was some riveting dialogue along the way. I hope you got that sense from the portions I included verbatim here. The dialogue was a definite strength of the entire series. And in this issue in particular, the art is gorgeous. I think it was a bit weaker in issue 2, and the cover for this one didn't really work for me, but there were some terrific panels and pages inside this issue. A lot of the pages in the last third of this issue were very quiet, some totally quiet, like those 6 straight pages of total silence as the city lifted off from the planet's surface. And in that last scene in the wilderness, when Adam finally appears to pull himself together to some extent, there are many silent panels in there as well. And the expressions of both Adam's and Eve's face are terrifically expressive. Okay, let's get to the Adam and Eve thing. I was mildly called out for my coverage in Episode 7 of the Bloodsport issue in Action Comics, where I took a particularly religious view of the story. But you can't avoid it here, right? Adam, Eve, new society, new creation, a new Genesis, if you will. And that's part of my issue with the ending. We have spent 142 pages tearing down Adam Strange, making sure that readers understand that this man is not actually heroic. I talked about my disappointment with his character in issue 1 of the relationship with Foxy Dr. Fox. But in the last 2 pages, he evidently gets redeemed. How? By what process? By not ignoring his newborn child anymore? That is scant evidence that he deserves to be the leader of Ran, that he is a hero in any sense of the word. Literally, when Zared attacked, Adam ran the other direction. Sardath saved the city. Adam had less than nothing to do with it. I joked in the coverage of Book 2 that we had Adam's pregnant wife, his mother-in-law, and his mistress all showing up at the same time. And to be very honest, very little bad comes from this confluence of events for Adam. There are few, if any, consequences for Adam for his cheating on his pregnant wife. Before she can even find out, she dies. I'm going to say it. Conveniently for him. And conveniently for the Adam and Eve parallel that we needed in this story. The mother-in-law Bantir may suspect, but there was never a confrontation. Eve confronted Adam, but not publicly. In essence, he got away with a major violation of the rules of heroism. As obscure a character as Adam Strange may have been in 1990, what little we knew about him in the common culture of comic books involved his Ranian family. We knew the name Sardath, his super smart father-in-law, and we knew Alana, the woman that Adam loved across the vast distances of space. It was portrayed as one of the great love stories in the DC Silver Age. But he tossed that all away, and he got away with it. No penance, no confession, no need to ask for forgiveness, no consequences at all. And that's part of why the Adam and Eve parallel falls woefully short for me. The only geekiness I have that's equal to or maybe even greater than my comic book geekiness is my theology and church history geekiness. And I don't necessarily mind those two interests of mine being mixed, religion and comics. I know that some people do, but I don't in theory. A key point about the Adam and Eve story as originally presented is that they started in their new creation as innocents, and then are cast out of paradise as a result of their sin. But this Adam and Eve seem to get their new start, their new creation, after their fall, after their sin, almost as a result of it. That just doesn't work for me. I don't mind the deconstruction of hero mythology, I don't mind dark and gritty, but in that final scene, we get what looks like will be a happy ending for Adam. And as a character within the scope of this story that Richard Bruning is telling, I don't think he deserved it. We like when the heroes of our stories get happy endings because of a sense of justice. Heroes deserve happy endings. to me, in this story, Adam Strange didn't earn the happy ending he seems to have gotten. I do wonder on the creative side at what point the Adam and Eve parallel was hit upon or created or inserted, if that was a starting point for the story or just at what point Dr. Fox as a character was created and at what point she was named Evelyn or called Eve. In my synopses, I made sure not to call her Eve or even Evelyn as often as she is in the book. That's where my Foxy Dr. Fox name came from. Personally, I didn't see the Adam and Eve parallel coming until jotting down my notes for issue 2, having thought about the book, starting to summarize it a bit, that I noticed her name in relation to his. I was telling the broad outline of the story to Emily, and she says she noticed about halfway through the second issue of my retelling, and so she was not surprised where it ended up. Both she and I, again, have interests in religion and theology, so the new Genesis concept was not a shock to her, though it seemed a little heavy-handed to me. I'm curious about what listeners thought about that ending, or if you had caught on to the Adam and Eve nomenclature at some point. Again, I didn't want to spoil that for you. It was probably a little more clear reading the stories than it was simply listening to me talk about them. But let's move away from that topic and on to the topic of where the story left Adam Strange vis-a-vis the broader DC universe, which many of the emailers and commenters really wanted to know about. A few years after this miniseries ended in Green Lantern 75, Kyle Rayner moved the city of Ranagar back to the planet. Sean Engel and Thomas DJ talked about that in episode number 75 of Just One of the Guys, a Green Lantern podcast available as part of the 2-2 Freaks Network. In 1998, this story was completely retconned out of existence. In a two-issue story in JLA, Mark Waid hit the reset button by bringing Alana back to life. Aside from Adam's daughter, Aaliyah, everything of consequence from the Man of Two Worlds was undone. From what I can tell, Dr. Evelyn Fox, the Eve of our Adam and Eve story, was never heard from again. After this, Adam Strange didn't do much until 2005, the Planet Heist story and the Rand-Thanagar War, the latter of which I read just a few years ago and really, really enjoyed. And I do not believe that he has appeared in the New 52. But for me, as a reader, retcons or undoing a story does not make that story less important or less valuable in the sense that any of these comics ever happened. This one still happened. I know it happened because I just read it. Now, I value continuity. I don't want to discount that. But I value a good reading experience more. If I have to make a choice between the two, give me a good reading experience rather than give me continuity. Like I've said in prior episodes covering this series, this is a better sci-fi story than it is a comic book story, because comic books have to be serialized. They have to have that soap opera nature, even those featuring an obscure character like Adam Strange. The problem is that this ending can't be the ending. I can see from DC's perspective that this had to be retconned. I kind of understand that. There needs to be the possibility for DC to tell other Adam Strange stories, and the template needs to include him being in love with Alana and having a sane Sardath. So in my mind, I have to think of this as an out-of-continuity story, an Elseworlds story, if you will, even though it was not intended to be that. And if I don't have to think about anything after the series, I can actually enjoy it more. It is dark and depressing, and I didn't like aspects of the ending, but overall, it is solid storytelling. It is certainly audacious, and it is certainly ambitious. And I respect creative efforts that have those characteristics. The verdict on Adam Strange, The Man of Two Worlds, Book 3, it's a bit disappointing given the level that my expectations had risen to after reading Books 1 and 2. I would have preferred parts of it to go maybe another direction, but of course it's worth 25 cents. As Ben Avery pointed out, I don't know any other place besides my LCS a couple of times a year where this book can be bought for a quarter. And overall, the fact that I got this entire story, beginning, middle, and end, 144 pages of interesting, thought-provoking, advertisement-free science fiction. Originally priced at around $12 for less than $1, of course it's worth it. Bummed a bit about the ending, but I definitely, thoroughly enjoyed the journey, and I hope you listeners did too. That wraps up my coverage of Adam Strange, The Man of Two Worlds, book number 3. In episode 22, we'll be looking at Iron Man 195 from Marvel Comics, cover date of June 1985. If you have any questions or comments about this issue with the podcast, feel free to contact me. Specifically, I'm interested in what listeners thought of how I covered this Adam Strange mini, first in terms of length of the episodes, for talking about longer issues. There are other prestige format books in the database, or annuals, or specials, other books that would require longer episodes like this. Just curious how you felt about the variety of episode lengths you've been getting recently from the show. The last, you know, 7 episodes of the podcast has had basically 3 double-length episodes like this one, as well as the, I guess we call it, supersized last episode. Second thing I'm curious about is what you thought of my covering a mini-series on the show. We did a 2-part story back in episodes 3 and 8, the John Sable issues. I like the randomness aspect of the show, but I also hate the idea of leaving a story unfinished. So, you know, the database does have other 3-issue or 4-issue minis in it, maybe even a 6-issue or 8-issue or even longer stories in it. If one of those gets picked, just curious about how you might want it handled. With this Adam Strange series, I put in a couple of other episodes in between the stories. Would you have preferred them right in a row? What about if it was a longer series? Now, let me be clear. This is not a democracy. I'm not asking you to vote. I'm way too big a fan of Dr. Doom for that to be the case. I'm just soliciting customer feedback that I may or may not consider before laying down my iron decrees. To summarize, if you have any questions or comments about this issue, this series, or the podcast, please contact me. Until next episode, I'm Professor Allen, and I'll see you in the quarter bin. The Quarter Bin Podcast is part of the Relatively Geeky family of podcasts. Show notes and links are available at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com, where the podcasts Uncovering the Bronze Age and Short Box Showcase also make their home. Links to Facebook and Twitter are there as well. Feedback for the show is welcome at relativelygeeky@gmail.com. And if you like what we've got going here, please leave a review and a rating in iTunes. It'll help more people discover the show. Thanks again for listening. Professor!